9 of Season 12 of Movement of the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 films, The Shawshank Redemption, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jess Rogers-Pearson. Welcome back once again, Jess.
Thanks, Rob. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. I've been enjoying myself all week. Hope you have too.
Oh, yeah. You know. Such a great movie to talk about.
Yes. Yes. And you know, you got what you asked for. You asked for the scene. So
yeah.
You know, that worked out for you. Minute 39 begins with Red finishing his thought and ends with Andy beginning to describe the game of chess. So we left things off yesterday with the Khan sitting on the roof drinking ice cold beer. And it's very funny that, you know, yesterday I read the portions from the novel that talk about it. There it was warm beer.
Right.
I would think to myself that someone like Hadley wouldn't bring them cold beer. He would bring them warm beer. He'd be like, okay, I'm gonna keep my part. I'm gonna give you the beers, but
right.
You know, I'm not gonna get them cold for you. You know, that type of thing.
So I think aesthetically, it's nice that they're coming out of this bucket of ice. And that's really maybe the detail of throwing it in at 10 a.m., right? Because he just brought it from work, came out of his car. It's still cold, maybe. But you're right. I don't think he would have brought them cold beer.
Yeah, exactly. So Red was narrating when we got cut off yesterday, so I'll backtrack slightly. He said, "We sat and drank with the sun on our shoulders and felt like free men. Hell, we could have been tarring the roof of one of our own houses. We were the lords of all creation." And we see even the guards are just lounging around too. You know, they're taking their time. It's funny that in the book yesterday when I was reading it, it said that it was a 20-minute break. It seems here that they were giving them a little more than a 20-minute break. You know, even though we only see it for a minute or something like that.
Yeah.
But it feels that this is a long break that they're giving them. Because it doesn't seem rushed, I guess you could say.
No, they don't seem rushed. You're right.
But again, I like it better this way. I like that it's not rushed. It's because it fits in so well with how this story is moving along that you want it to be something that is not rushed. No matter how much we're supposed to dislike Hadley, you know, he's like, okay, he's still thankful and grateful for what was done for him. You know, that type of thing. So I like that little bit, the way that they add that. And then we get a shot of Andy just sitting on the side with a very weird smirk on his face. And Red continues his narration and says, "As for Andy, he spent that break hunkered in the shade, a strange little smile on his face, watching us drink his beer." Haywood looks at him and sees Andy, you know, sitting on the side there. You know, he reaches into the bucket and grabs a beer and brings it over to Andy. You know, here we'll go back to the idea of, you know, that they do have ice and ice cubes there, you know, keeping things nice and cool for everyone, I guess, you know, that type of thing. So when do you think when do you think they started using ice cubes?
You mean for more than just the giant ice cubes to keep for drinks?
For drinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, you can go really far back that people, you know, would like to use ice, you know, for cocktails and things like that. But, you know, when did it really, I mean, you can go all the way back
sure.
to the Romans and Persians and in Victoria and, you know, the Victorian era and things like that. But I'm saying the idea of, you know, that it became more common for everyone to use ice.
Right. Ice cubes, probably not until the teens or 20s. At the earliest, I would guess.
And you are correct. You are correct.
Wow.
The very first ice cube tray was invented by Fred Wolf Jr. in 1914.
Okay.
Because before then, people would actually have to take large blocks of ice,
right.
You know, from the lake and use ice picks to chop them up a little bit in order to use them to drink. You know, once they started using refrigerators around this time, so it made sense.
Sure.
And over the decades, they found ways to make it that you can remove the ice cubes much easier. So in the because originally it was I believe it was like a metal
Metal
ice
tray.
cube, right?
Yeah.
And then in the 20s, an inventor named Lloyd Groff Kopman patented the first flexible rubber ice cube tray, which made it
Oh,
easier to pop out the frozen cubes.
wow.
A decade later, in 1933, someone named Guy Tinkham invented the first flexible stainless steel all metal tray that can be
Okay.
bent sideways to eject cubes. And then in the 60s, that's when they started making plastic trays,
Of course.
which eventually replaced most of the metal and rubber variations that we're familiar with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that type of thing. I mean, I'm a big fan of ice. I always have to have ice in my freezer, and even if I'm drinking something cold, I generally will want it even colder and put more ice in it. But
Oh, wow.
I always try to make sure that I don't dilute whatever I'm drinking too much with the ice, because then, like if I'm drinking Coke or something like that, I don't want it to feel like,
You don't want
the
watered down
Coke.
Coke.
That's right. That's right. So I do my best to try to keep away from that. But there's nothing like drinking a cold drink. Heywood then walks over to Andy and picks up a beer and walks over to Andy. You could see that the beer is basically dripping from the coldness.
Yeah. The
Yeah.
combo of condensation and the bucket he's in, the bucket it was in, yeah.
And again, it shows that at least the character here of Hadley, didn't skimp on the fact that he was giving them some sort of special treat, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And Heywood walks over to Andy and says, "Want a cold one, Andy?" And he offers him a beer, and he just looks at him and goes, "No, no, thanks. I gave up drinking." Which it's a funny line for him to say, because
Is.
it's sort of like, okay, I give up drinking because, I killed my wife because of it, or I gave up drinking
Right.
because I almost killed my wife. At
Yeah.
this point in the movie, you're not really sure the whole thing, but he I guess easily sobered up for whatever reason.
Right.
Obviously, my interpretation of it is that he sobered up because he realized that because he was drunk, it got him in jail.
Yeah.
And since we know he's innocent, after the fact, it's the idea that, okay, if you would have been drunk, it might have been a little easier. So he basically, we know that Andy's a very, very methodical. So it's very possible that he just said to himself, okay, I'm going cold turkey because, I got myself into a really bad situation because I was drinking.
Yeah.
And Heywood just looks at him and doesn't really understand. he's like, I don't really know why this guy doesn't want a beer, but okay. And then he just starts drinking the beer himself. But Tim Robbins does a great job in this scene, because we see him, just lounging around there, looking at everybody, and having this little quirky smirk on his face
Yep.
that eventually, I mean, right now Red's going to narrate, and we're going to get more of an idea as to what it is that Andy is actually going through at this point. And Red then says, "You can argue he done it to curry favor with the guards, or maybe make a few friends among us cons. Me, I think he did it just to feel normal again." And then we see Red takes a swig of his beer at the same time also,
Yeah.
as he's going on here, if only for a short while. So it's interesting. They're giving us basically three choices, and we don't know what the truth is.
No, we never, they never come back to it.
That's right, and it could be a combination of the three also.
Right.
I mean, we know that Andy is having problems with the sisters at this point. So,
Right.
and but we also know that Andy is in Red's posse. He's part of the clique. So,
But still a little on the edge.
no,
Like he's in there.
not if he's one of the guys that Red easily put him in with the group of people
True. This is how he brought him
that's right.
in this tight to bring him tight in to the group, but he's still he's not one of them in the same way.
He's well,
Like,
he's not one of them because he's more sophisticated than all of them are. You
right.
know, he doesn't fit in completely with them, but I my impression is that over the 2 years that Andy's been knowledgeable of what Red does and is friendly with him, you know, he began to like Andy because, you know, he's Red's not going to just let anyone in on the tar job.
Right, no, for
You know,
sure.
he's gonna, you know, he said some of the guys I know. You know, that's
Yeah,
what he said
me
last
and some
week.
of the guys I know.
So
Right.
Andy is more than just a borderline acquaintance of Red by this point. You know, again, I we know that he and Red are not having conversations. Red doesn't know enough about him. There obviously
Right.
still is enough of a distance between the two of them. You know, that goes without saying. There's no question about that. But then, you know, the question remains, okay, so what, you know, what is Andy's relationship with Red and the rest of the guys at this point?
Yeah, and how did he get brought in? Did he ask to get in? Was he trying to become friendly with the cons, or was this something where Red brought him in? We don't really know a
Right.
lot yet.
I presume that it's something that just naturally happened.
Yeah.
You know, because we know that Andy is asking for other things. You know, again, tomorrow he'll
Right.
start asking for more and stuff like that, but you know, he asked for the rock hammer. We know that he's gonna get a polishing rag, and there's a whole bunch of different things that he is getting, and you can just presume that most of these things he's gotten from Red himself. So,
Probably.
right. So they're more than just passing acquaintances, as far as I can tell here. But again, I like the way that they presented that. Okay, we have three choices here. You know, is Andy trying to be friendly with the guards? Is Andy trying to be friendlier with us? I mean, let's even put it this way. Haywood, when he goes over to give him the beer, calls him Andy. You know,
Yeah,
so
true.
he's accepted him. He's not like you know. He's not calling him. It's been 2 years, but he's still not treating him like the fresh fish that he was 2 years earlier.
Right. True.
You know, that type of thing. It's just a question of looking for the clues to try to get some sort of an impression as to
Yeah.
what's really going on there. But I do feel that Red's last suggestion is probably the true one.
I think it's a little of all three. I think Andy is complex and sophisticated enough to knock off all three things at the same time. I think he's reveling in feeling normal for a short while, but I think he knows he's capable of these multifaceted actions because he does them a lot.
That's true. And at this point, the shot changes, and we see a checkerboard. Right away, we see that Red basically moves his red piece, which again is very funny that Red is playing
Of
the
course.
red he's the red player in the whole thing, and you know, he jumps over two of Andy's pieces, the from the black pieces, and goes, "King me." Again, it also does not look like this is the first time the two of them are playing this game,
No.
which goes back to what we were saying before, that they do have a budding friendship at this point. But also it's a little interesting the way that the game is being played between them, that you know only now they're going to start having a conversation about this whole thing. But again, it
Right.
keeps it very ambiguous about when, you know, when what happened during the course of those 2 years.
Right. Yeah. And how soon after the roofing event is this game taking place?
Right. Again, I don't think it really makes much of a difference.
No, but is it the next week? Is it 6 months later? Like, how much are they? Did it take them And this goes into the next minute, so we can discuss
Right.
then. But how much are they
Right. And
friends?
how much are they spending time
It's
together?
starting to become hard. Yeah. Agreed.
Right. Okay, so they're playing the game of checkers. How far back do you think the game of checkers goes? When do you think it was first invented, I guess you could say, or started playing?
I honestly don't have any idea, but I would say a long time because that's a fairly easy setup to do. So 15, 1600s.
It actually goes all the way back to 3000 BC.
Okay, that
There
makes
were
more sense.
versions of it, and
Sure.
archaeologists have found the oldest known checkerboard-like artifact in the ancient Iraqi city of Ur.
Oh,
And it
wow.
was there was a board game that was played at the time that was known as El Kirku, something like that, El Kirku. Which was also something that was used in ancient Egypt and things like that. But the modern checkers that we're more familiar with now was pretty much invented by a Frenchman in the 1100s. And
Okay.
basically he took parts of the game of El Kirkat and applied them to a 64 square chessboard.
Makes
And
sense.
he decided to use 12 pieces per player, and it was originally called, again, I don't know French, so I don't know what it would translate as, but it was either Furgus or Furus, something like that.
Okay.
Then there was a strategy book about checkers that was written in Valencia, Spain, by Antonio Torquemada in 1547.
Okay.
And then the official rule book of checkers was published in 1756 by the English mathematician William Paine. And basically it started being it was known as draught in England before it became known as checkers in North America.
That's really interesting. It makes sense that it would be around a long, long time. And then I did not guess far enough
That's
back.
fine. And why do you think it is called checkers?
I've always thought it was connected to the concept of checkmate, but I don't know if it is in chess.
Well, first of all,
Is
it's
it?
connected to both the pattern on the board, where you
Okay.
have alternating light
Oh,
and
okay.
dark squares that form a checkered
Sure.
pattern. Okay,
Okay.
but also there is the word checkered. Is a French word, is based on a French word, échecs, which means chess.
Oh, okay.
So, because obviously there is a connection between chess and checkers. We'll talk more about chess tomorrow. We'll save that for
Perfect.
tomorrow to talk about that, because we only get a few just a few seconds of the discussion of chess today anyway. In medieval England, they used to calculate taxes using a large cloth that had a checkered pattern in order to count out coins, and that was known
Okay.
as the exchequer.
Wow, makes sense.
Right, so so the British version is known as draughts. It's spelled draughts, but it's called draughts, which comes from the Old English word drogan, which means to move, pull, or draw. So it
Sure.
deals more with the idea of actually the movement of the game pieces rather than the look of the board itself.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And Andy basically changes the subject and says, because he uses the term king me, and then Randy Red says king me, so then Andy places another red piece on top of the other one to signify that he is kinging him, and then he goes chess. Now there's a game of kings. And Red looks at him and goes, "What?" And Andy goes, "Civilized." And then he gets cut off. Besides being civilized, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what it is and what he's really referring to. But again, I like the way they start to set this up. Again, we'll probably talk more about it tomorrow, about how this whole everything, what's really going on here. But it still brings up the question of how long have these two guys been playing chess together or checkers together?
Yeah, sure.
So I like the way that they do that. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this particular minute?
Nope, we got everything.
Okay. So today's segment is called Andy Do Thursday, where once again I will give Jay Clute the credit for naming that. I think it was a great choice for him to name it that way.
Nice.
So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up by telling us your favorite Tim Robbins performances?
So Tim, it turns out looking through all of Tim Robbins' movies, there's a I don't like very many of his movies. And the ones that I do really like, he's listed in the credits, yes, but he's not a huge part of them. So there's only a couple that I ended with where he's a big part of it. So my number five is Mystic River, mostly because it's a really good movie and interesting to see him in it. One where he is a big part of it and I do like, and it's such a weird ass movie, is IQ, where he plays kind of an idiot who falls in love with Meg Ryan. My third is, or number three, he's barely in it, although once you know who he is, he's easy to pick out, and that's Top Gun.
Well, because he's towering
Number
over
two.
everyone else when everyone's cheering Maverick.
Oh God, hugely. Yeah, he's easy to find. But he's only in it. He's in half a dozen scenes for like split
Yeah,
seconds. I don't even know
he's
if he
in the
talks.
beginning, and then he takes over for Goose after Goose dies. Spoiler alert for
Yeah.
everyone.
Number two is High Fidelity. He's basically the bad guy in some way, even though Rob is clearly the bad guy until he figures out he's a man child and needs to respect his girlfriend and et cetera. But the ponytail is so easy to hate in High Fidelity. And his just like whole granola personality is just almost a caricature of everything. And then his big movie that is just fantastic is Bull Durham. I know it maybe is a Kevin Costner movie in its own way, but he's so good. Tim Robbins is so good in it. So yeah, there's my number five, or
All
my
right.
five top.
Excellent. Once again, a great list. Thank you very much for that. Okay, and now we will play the first of two games. Which one do you want to play first today? Well, I'll let you choose.
I like Hilo. Let's do that one first.
All right, we will go for Hilo. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. All right, the 1998 film Elizabeth.
Ooh, I like that movie. Let's see. IMDb probably has an 8.5 and Rotten Tomatoes a 96.
No, you overshot both of those. So
Oh,
IMDb
wait.
is 7.4
What?
and Rotten Tomatoes is 83.
Oh, wow. That's too bad. I guess I like that movie a lot more.
Well, that year everyone was thinking of Judi Dench as Queen Elizabeth, so
True. Yeah.
right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Right, the 1991 film Bugsy.
Whoa, Bugsy. It's a big, is that Warren Beatty?
Yep, Warren Beatty and Annette Bening.
Annette Bening. Oh yeah. I think people liked that. How about a 8.2 on IMDb and a 90 on Rotten Tomatoes?
You went really high on these, so it's a 6.8 on IMDb
Whoa.
and 84%
Okay.
on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah.
9.9, you said. Wow. Well, I guess it was the hype that I remember of Bugs of Robin, no, of Annette Bening and Warren Beatty in the
Right.
same movie.
That's right. Well, that I think that's where they met, and then they got married after that, I
I
think.
think so. Something like that sounds familiar.
Right, so let's spin the wheel for the final time this week. Oh, no, sorry. Final time today. Right, the 1978 film Midnight Express.
Midnight Express. I don't think I've seen that.
That was written by Oliver Stone.
Let's say a 7.8 IMDb because I'm overshooting, and an 88 Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow, very good, very good. It's 7.5 and 89. So yeah,
Ooh, okay.
you did very well there.
I finally got closer.
That's right, that's right. All right, now we will move to the second game, Name That Novel Adaptation. Let's
Yeah,
spin the
I've
wheel.
not done well with these.
All right, this is a movie from 2023, and its
Oh, okay.
original title is American Prometheus.
American Prometheus, 2023. Can I get a hint?
I know that any hint that I give you will completely give it away, but I will do so anyway.
Okay.
It stars Cillian Murphy.
Nope, that's not going to help me. I'm
And it
sorry.
was directed by Christopher Nolan.
Oh, it's a one word title that I am not going to remember.
It is correct that it is a one-word title.
Yeah. No, I don't remember the name of it.
It's a person's name.
Right. Oh, Oppenheimer.
There you go.
American Prometheus.
That's
There you
right.
go.
That's right. So the original book is called American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Makes
Again,
sense.
I couldn't read that entire thing because
No, of
that would have
course
given
not.
it away completely. So,
Completely. Yeah.
all right.
Perfect.
Exactly. So Jess, would you like to once again tell everyone where they can find you?
My podcast is still out there somewhere, Real Insight. And then if you're looking for the real me, I'm on Threads at Eco River.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to rob@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.